upstairs left us years ago. So there ain't no fake except the one you make. And there ain't no hell except the shit you take every day. So don't tell me life doesn't hurt. And then you don't need the people cause you've got your church. You gotta take your head out of the sky. Because there ain't nothing there but the satellites.
And we are the Nonprofits. Or at least that's what we want you to think. I could be Dennis Louvet, along with Jeff D. and Russell Glasser, who could actually both be completely fictional. And we claim to be coming to you live, even though this could be a recording from other than the 19th of March, 2014, from an undisclosed location that might be in Austin, and thus could be in Texas. But maybe it isn't. I could say the show is sponsored by the Atheist Community of Austin, something that might not exist, even though it's presented as a non-profit educational organization for the promotion of positive atheism and the separation of church and state. Calling their voicemail at 512-220-6561 proves nothing, since anyone can set up a fake voicemail. And even their website at www.atheist-community.org could be a gigantic hoax. Now, it's true there is a broadcast every first and third Wednesday of each month from 7 to 8:30 Central Time, at least for now. But is it live? Is it really the Nonprofits? Who knows? You don't know. Even following the directions at www.nonprofitsradio.com could lead you to little more than a fake chat room populated by nothing but bots. They wouldn't even have to pass the Turing test to be convincing over the Internet. So we'll tell you to sit back and enjoy the show, but for all we know, there's nobody listening.
Thank you, Dennis.
You're welcome. Mm-hmm.
And thank you to all of our automated listeners.
Yes, I just wanted to cast out on everything.
Because
it's so effective.
How's everybody doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
Doing all right.
Good. Had a full 2 weeks since last episode.
Yep, that's what happens. Sometimes it's 3 weeks.
Sometimes.
That's right.
But not this month.
No, not this time. Last, it was March 5th. Was the
something
last
like that, yeah.
Thing. Anybody been up to anything interesting in those last 2 weeks? Dennis?
Oh, well, went to a memorial for a friend.
Correct.
Paid off a bunch of debt and stuff, so.
Well, that's
I'm
good.
Doing okay right now.
Good, good, good. You still taking commissions?
Yes, I am, for Draw My Character. Yes, absolutely.
And how would people contact you if they
Through the Draw My Character Facebook page.
Right.
Yeah.
Is that all one word, Draw My Character?
Draw My Character, all one word.
On Facebook?
Yeah.
Okay. Russell?
Let's see. Well, I think I mentioned that a couple months ago I was on a podcast called Game Theory.
Yeah.
Where we talked about an online book, which you can also order as a real book, called Playing to Win. Since then, I've been in touch with the author of the book because it turns out he, too, is an atheist, and he listened to that episode now after I told him about it. And, I got to tell him a lot of cool stuff. And also, Jeremiah, like me, Jeremiah is the host of that podcast, one of the hosts, and he is an avid StarCraft player like me. So we have been streaming some two-on-two StarCraft games, which you can see if you subscribe to my twitch.tv channel, twitch.tv/rglasser27.
Cool.
And I've been playing some Elder Scrolls Online beta.
I hear that.
So that's fun.
And I believe I mentioned that I've been playing way too much Starbound.
Right.
2D side-scrolling science fiction exploration game with procedurally generated planets.
So I like that idea.
You get in your little spaceship. When you get bored of a certain set of monsters and certain planetary conditions, you can get on your little spaceship, fuel it up, and fly to another planet, and it'll generate one for you, which is cool.
Yeah. I'd also like to mention proudly that Linnea and I successfully completed the game Outlast together, which was terrifying.
All right.
I should also mention that I launched my latest Kickstarter project this very morning.
Mm-hmm.
This very morning being March 19, because we don't know when people are listening to the show.
Right.
On March 19, and going until, I don't know, I think the Sunday, the 13th of April. It is the first complete fantasy role-playing game setting, tabletop fantasy role-playing game setting ever published was in a game called Empire of the Petal Throne by TSR, the Dungeons & Dragons people. And it was created by a guy who was a professor, university professor of linguistics and various other cultures. And he came up with this thing and slapped D&D rules on top of it, and it was called Empire of the Petal Throne. And I've gotten a license from the Tecumel Foundation. Tecumel's the name of the world. And I'm doing a new role-playing game using that setting. So it's called Bethorm, B-E-T-H-O-R-M, which is the Tsolyani word for a pocket dimension.
Right.
And publishing a new game called Bethorm, the Plane of Tecumel.
You can find it on Kickstarter.
On Kickstarter. It's a Kickstarter project. If you just search for B-E-T-H-O-R-M, you'll find it. And it's going crazy right now.
Oh, good. Yeah. Good.
I'm having to physically restrain myself from picking up my phone and checking the Kickstarter page to see where it's at now.
Right. But
it's doing very well for its first day.
What do you call it? Your foil ball?
My foil ball.
Yeah.
Pee-wee Herman on the Pee-wee Herman show used to say, "Hey kids, let's see how big our foil ball is today." Giant disc of aluminum foil would come rolling out and he'd slap another little piece on it.
That's great.
Nice.
That's what it feels like to run a Kickstarter project. You always just want to see how much it's accumulated. It's also like that game,
Katamari Damacy.
Katamari Damacy.
That's what you were
going to
say, isn't it?
That's right. That's right. It just rolls around accumulating stuff.
Mind reading.
Yeah. So that's what I've been up to.
Yeah. Hey, I just want to mention to people who are not listening live, but in the future. and we're like on every first and third Wednesday of the month. And if you were listening live, you could be in the chat room, which, you get to by going to the Ustream link from the nonprofitsradio.com homepage. So maybe next time you should consider doing that.
That's right.
That is a fine, important thing to remind people of, Russell. But in the interest of being a total pedant, I will point out that there is nobody that you're not talking to in the future. Even people listening live are not really hearing your words at the exact moment.
They're listening on a 5-second delay.
Correct.
But some of them are in the chat room.
Even the people in the chat room, it takes some time for those electrons to travel down.
But they can't be sure you said the things you said because, I mean, were they there? No, of course not.
No.
There you go. You can't tell anything about the past.
That's true. I learned that from your intro just a few minutes ago in the past.
It's all in the past.
Maybe that happened.
Well, let's start doing a show, shall we?
Oh, we can try.
Do you want, I'm just going to start. I have a bunch today.
All right. I have less than a bunch today.
Less than a bunch.
What you got?
I have a bushel, perhaps. Is that a lot?
There's a bushel and a peck, and I'm not sure how much either of those measurements are.
It's more than a dollop.
but less than a smidge.
Yeah.
Is that a metric smidge or a...
you're talking about shitloads. Go ahead.
We have some listener mail. If God is everywhere, God is in smallest part of my smallest atom. Ultimately, going to smallest part, there is God, and because God is everywhere, the smallest part of me is God. God is also the biggest part of me and everything between. Does this make me a God?
I really want to tell this guy to shut the fuck up right now.
If not, why am I missing something? Thanks, Kitty.
I have to restrain myself from facepalming myself into unconsciousness.
Okay. All right. So there's a category error here, right?
Oh, man.
Okay. let's say... In the Empire State Building, there are bricks.
Okay.
Right?
Yep.
Does that make a brick the Empire State Building? No.
No.
That's what you're missing, Kitty.
I have a brick here.
Even if
it is not the Empire State Building.
Even if all of that brick is Empire State Building. It is not the entire Empire State Building.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, we're talking about a fictional character of God here, right? So none of this, you don't have to worry about any of this crap, because there's nothing really here to concern yourself with. But just as far as language goes, no, just because God is everywhere and you are in part of everywhere, that does not mean that you are the entire God.
Right. And hey, if you call a tail a leg, do dogs have five legs?
Yes.
No, calling a tail a leg doesn't make it a leg.
Somebody wise said that.
Yes.
Okay.
Apocryphally, Abraham Lincoln, I think that was.
Let's see now. What else we got? Oh, I got a big segment. Do you got a little news thing? Can we intersperse?
News thing I was going to read was about the Big Bang.
I'll do that.
But that's a big news thing.
That
definition.
Could take a long time. On the last Nonprofits podcast, Jeff asked if any of the show's listeners can find examples of Christian theme parks that are still in operation 10 years after its opening. He also asked which one lasts the longest and when it died. Russell brought up the Holy Land experience in Orlando, Florida. That park opened in February 2001 and is still in operation now 13 years later. So 13 years. I found a few examples of evangelical theme parks that are long dead, but which had a shelf life of longer than 10 years. Okay, this is where I need to admit I had done no research, right? 10 years was a figure pulled entirely out of thin air. 13 is not very impressive. Let's see if any of these are impressive.
Yeah, but still, you made a good conversational point, and now we will learn some interesting things.
Correct.
Right. So,
at least we hope. Holy Land USA, 1958 to 1984. The Christian theme park that lasted longest was Holy Land USA, which opened in Waterbury, Connecticut in 1958 and died 25 years later in 1984. 26 years later. This was a Catholic-themed park whose centerpiece was a 56-foot steel cross that was lit up at night and could be seen for miles. According to a Slate article, it is a town joke that citizens grow up thinking Jesus was electrocuted on that cross. The park consisted of a chapel. Yeah.
Christianity has such a reputation for inspiring great art. Really, a giant cross? That's the best you could come up with?
Apparently so.
What's great about the cross, though, is it's such a simple...
Such a boring geometric shape.
But it's such a simple geometric shape that you can find them...
Everywhere.
You
know, everywhere.
Just by random chance. World everywhere.
Trade Center rubble,
so it's a right. So it's an
DNA.
Easy thing to generate instances that morons can look at and say that that's significant when
right.
It's not.
It's unfortunately really iconic. Yes.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, why can't Christianity have like one of the kind of images that cool band logos look like? Like somebody,
why didn't they look up
the Queensryche logo sometime? I love that.
There was
with a knife through its eye socket.
There was the Jewish Messiah who was executed on a giant dodecahedron, but didn't catch on.
Yes, no. If Jesus had been broken on the wheel, we'd have had a whole different icon. Yeah.
Dungeons and Dragons players honor his memory to this day,
or on a giant. A foil ball.
He was crushed by a giant foil ball.
A senseless waste of human life.
The park consisted of a chapel, the 14 stations of the cross, and replicas of catacombs and Israelite villages. Replicas of catacombs. Okay.
Cool.
See, speaking of Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah.
And the thing that people don't actually do when they play Dungeons and Dragons, but was popularized in that Tom Hanks movie, dressing up in costumes and going into places and pretending that it's a dungeon. They had catacombs, replica catacombs. Somebody's got to figure out how to get in there and film like fake D&D adventures. And Israelite villages cobbled together from cinder blocks and bathtubs. There was also maybe that's why not.
Yeah.
Interesting historical note. That is actually accurate. All the ancient Israelites built their homes out of
cinder blocks
and
bathtubs.
Bathtubs. Yeah.
There was also representation of the Garden of Eden and a diorama depicting Daniel in the lion's den. There were also the obligatory reenactments of various key events in the life and ministry of Jesus. Since its closing, Holy Land USA has become a ruin, complete with beheaded statues, demolished dioramas strewn around an overgrown and dilapidated landscape of garbage and graffiti. Tragically, the Holy Land USA wasteland was the site of the rape and murder of a young woman in 2010.
Great.
Okay. Was it by Glenn Beck?
No. What?
Yes, right. He hasn't denied it.
What?
There was a person out there who was deliberately mimicking the style of Glenn Beck by attempting to start a rumor that Glenn Beck raped and murdered a young girl.
Oh, boy.
And so he said, you know, people on the internet are saying it, and he hasn't denied it.
So it must be true.
That was a while ago, though.
Okay.
But to clarify, Glenn Beck did not do that we know of.
That we know of.
Another Christian park was Heritage USA in Fort Mill, South Carolina. This artificial Christian environment lasted for a total of 11 years. See, that's close to my 10-year mark. Between 1978 and 1989, it was created by the infamous televangelists Jim Baker and his wife Tammy Faye, who headed the Praise the Lord Club. This resort featured the Jerusalem Amphitheater, a.k.a. King's Castle, advertised as the ultimate in a pleasurable vacation. Pious pilgrims to the park were encouraged to serve the Lord through consumerism, basking in the spiritual sacredness of luxury hotels, conference centers, a health spa, skating rink, and a large campground accommodating 400 units.
That is also what ancient Israelite cities were full of.
In addition, an indoor shopping center complex sold exclusively religious books, music, records, and framed prayers. Visitors were offered prayer and counseling services and vacation Bible schools that taught evangelism. The Heritage Island Water Park was one of the resort's main attractions when the PTL Club found themselves in dire financial straits in the late 1980s. The notorious Jerry Falwell plunged down a 163-foot-high water slide called the Typhoon, fully clothed in his suit, the end result of a promise he made in a fundraising gimmick. Apparently it worked. The PTL Club raked in $20 million from that sideshow spectacle. See, now that's what I think they need to do.
Good grief.
For the giant Noah's Ark thing they're building now. Right, they should have more stunts like that. Screw debating atheists. Right, that's exposing your shills to common sense and intelligence.
It's how many
you don't want to do that. Right, you need to take some noted televangelists and they could have, I would think, some kind of dunk tank thing would be appropriate, considering the water theme of the Noah's Ark.
Make it more extreme. They could study Jackass and use that stuff. That would be great.
Awesome.
Yeah.
The fundraising device resulted in Falwell taking over the park from the Bakers, an arrangement that Jim Baker wanted to make in order to avoid a takeover by people who had an interest in exposing his hanky-panky with one of the church secretaries. But all this was not enough to avoid the inevitable. Baker's scandals began making headlines starting in 1987, resulting in a drop in attendance at Heritage. It was at about this time that the IRS revoked the tax-exempt status, which it had weaseled for itself in the past. The downfall of Heritage USA was made complete in 1989 when Hurricane Hugo severely damaged many of the resort's buildings and grounds. Thank you, Nathan, for all that info.
And that's, I guess, what that hurricane was targeted at, right?
Sure. Falwell, have you got the money?
That was
somebody
that
else.
Oral.
Yeah.
So do you guys remember the Jack Chick Tract Dark Dungeons?
Yes.
Yeah.
Totally do.
I believe we talked about it on the show a long time ago. I think one of my favorite things that you said, Jeff, was something like, if... So this character plays Dungeons and Dragons, and then when she gets to level 8 or whatever, the Dungeon Master says, it's time for you to learn about real magic.
Yes.
And I think you said something like, what if they had been playing a superhero game? Would she then get heat vision?
Right.
Right.
Some low budget.
Which, by the way, I think any tabletop RPG that could offer either of those things would be a huge hit.
Super popular.
Yes.
Yeah. I would like to play the sci-fi game where you get your own starship.
Yeah.
Yeah. You used to get those in Traveler. Ever generate characters for the Traveler science fiction game?
If they survived.
They had this crazy character.
Nearly as much.
The original game had this crazy thing where you would actually roll dice to find out what skills your character acquired from year after year of serving in the military. And then you would muster out at the end and get stuff. And it was possible to get a spaceship as one of your mustering out benefits.
If you survived,
it was a character generation system where you could die
before you
and have to start over again before you get to play your character.
I see. Well, I'm hesitant about this one because I'm not sure if it's a deliberate joke or not. But but the sources I'm reading seem to say that it is some very sincere Christian group that is raising funds on Kickstarter to make a Dark Dungeons movie.
I think that you have misinterpreted that.
Yeah? What?
I don't think that Dark Dungeons is intended to be serious. I think it's very carefully treading a line of...
You mean the comic book or the movie?
The movie.
The movie.
The movie is very carefully treading a line and playing the comic totally straight, but that's the joke.
You think so?
I'm pretty convinced, yeah.
Okay. Well, either way, I
read some Facebook post or something by these guys or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a brilliant idea.
Sure.
By the way.
Yeah. The URL you can check out is Dark Dungeons the Movie, and I may regret this, but I'm going to try to play the trailer over the microphone.
Oh
no. Technology.
Okay, wait. That coming through?
Yeah, I can hear it.
You really talked me into coming here, Marcy. If we want to spread the good news at this university, then we have got to fit into college life. Come on, we've got to socialize. Guess you're right.
Now there's a...
Were they just rolling dice in a pool of blood?
Yes.
Somebody's writhing around on the floor. Oh, yeah, they're rolling six-sided dice.
That's chocolate.
They're dressed up in these wonderful cosplay outfits.
What could go wrong?
Yeah, no, that's... Come on, man.
All right.
Legends.
Yeah, come on. That's tongue-in-cheek.
All right. Well,
brilliant.
If they are playing both sides, then maybe they'll manage to rake in some Christian bucks.
Uh-huh.
Which I guess
that would be hilarious.
Yeah, so we have that to look forward to.
Yes.
Cool.
What's next? You want more news?
I'll do another one.
All right.
Because you said you're...
Yeah, I need some lifelines today.
Okay. All right. Well, we got some more. So, you might recall that a couple episodes ago...
Yes. I noticed this myself.
What? I just say we asked that we did a story about a guy who was a snake handler.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Why is that funny? That's not funny. The man died.
Yeah.
What's wrong with you guys?
I know. Once or twice.
And I was fascinated by this whole snake handling thing and asked if anybody could explain how snake handling could be going on at all without people just dropping dead left and right, right? So we asked our listeners.
Yes, we did.
I sure hope our listeners came through.
No, wait a minute. No. I'm going to drop the gag.
All right.
We got three responses that made it to the air. From three different people who had heard or done some slight research,
right? Yeah.
And come up with quite different answers to the question. Yes. And that was I didn't mean to make fun of them because,
yeah. But also more reasonable than what we had come up with.
Yeah, I honestly yeah. didn't have any idea. So right. you know, but I find it fascinating that you throw a question like that open, and it's not really just painfully immediately obvious. It's going to take some deeper research.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, we got more.
Thank gosh for our listeners.
I recently read an article that seems to shed some light on the question of why deaths of the snake-handling preachers are not more common. Since this article was not cited in any of the responses you read on the air,
yes,
I thought it was possible that no one had brought it up. I wanted to share it with you in case you were unaware of it. The article is Snake Salvation by James Lindsay. It is found on the Richard Dawkins Foundation's website.
Mm. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have a big... We have a big name drop here, so
yes, it's a shout out to
that could mean
Dawkins,
that this is right. really the answer.
Yeah.
The article explains
Although Richard Dawkins is not a guy I normally think of as the authority on snake handling,
but he didn't write it. James Lindsay did.
Right.
Do you think James Lindsay is the authority on snake handling?
I have no idea who James Lindsay is. So
he's on the Richard Dawkins Foundation's website. The article explains.
They would never write something if he didn't know what he was talking about.
No, I'm sure that that our listener who sent this in is sincere, and I'm sure mm-hmm. James Lindsay is sincere. But it's clearly an issue where there are a lot of different views
yes.
floating around, right? And this is why science is important. We're having fun with it, right?
Right.
The fact
right.
is, it's not. Things are not immediately obvious.
Yes, this
right?
is the hypothesis stage, and I'm not sure. The whole issue has been really experimented with to get hard data. But
the broader issue is that all snake handlers think that whatever they're doing is what makes them safe, and it's not fucking safe.
Right.
Right.
I mean, right, because they do die.
Yeah, a lot.
And I just want to clarify for our listeners, I'm absolutely certain that Dennis was not suggesting that any of you out there should move on to the experimental
stage.
No.
Okay.
No.
According to the article, the article explains that rattlesnakes, the type of snake that killed Pastor Jamie Coots, mm-hmm. are not very deadly even when untreated by a medical professional. According to the article, even if left untreated, rattlesnake bites carry nearly a 97.4% survival rate in humans. Assuming the information in the article is correct, this makes the 8 previous snake bites that Coot survived seem a lot less remarkable.
Right.
Yeah.
According to the article, there are other types of snakes whose bites carry a much higher risk of death in humans if the bites are left untreated. However, I suspect that rattlesnakes are commonly used in the snake-handling churches because they are so common in the areas of the country where this type of worship is practiced. Well, now we're getting speculative.
Yep.
We don't know that that's
but
true.
That's fine.
The rattle of the snake adds to the frightening effect, which is likely to wow church attendees, and possibly because the bites are less deadly than other types of snakes. Mm-hmm. I sought out other sources to make sure that the information in this article seemed accurate because the author did not cite his sources. Well done. That's good.
Yeah.
I only found one other source that gave lethality rates for untreated snake bites, www.toxinology.com.
Cool.
And that's got to be authoritative because, you know, they have the website name.
Yeah.
According to...
Sounds official.
But it very
yeah,
could
yeah.
be.
It's good.
Who else is going to grab toxinology.com?
I had to grab that just so I could troll. Yeah, no.
I want to just take an aside here. There's this guy, Rogers Cadenhead, is a internet guy who... made some minor press a few years ago by grabbing up the websites for the possible names of the new pope. I don't think it was this last one. It was the previous pope. He, grabbed
right.
them up. And then he made demands from the Catholic Church in exchange for those web addresses. And one of the things he said he wanted was one of the hats.
Okay.
And this came up on Facebook, and I asked him if he got the hat, and he said no.
Oh.
According to that site, the lethality of rattlesnakes depends greatly on the species of the rattlesnake.
Mm.
Since none of the articles on Coots that I found listed the species of rattlesnake that bit him, I looked up a common Kentucky rattlesnake, timber rattlesnake, Crotalus horridus. According to the website, this rattlesnake's untreated snake bite has a lethality rate between 1 and 10%. And there's a URL, which I'm not going to read because it's long.
Right.
I hope this helps to shed some light on how snake handling preachers are able to survive as many snake bites as they do. Thank you for your time and effort on the nonprofits. It's both funny and thought-provoking. Keep up the great work, Susan. Well, thank you, Susan. Now we know.
Yeah.
Precisely.
Right.
Yes, there is. No, that was, I appreciated that, you know, research and a certain amount of skepticism and double checking and stuff occurred.
Yeah.
That's
great.
The right way to go about it. Well done, Susan. Russell, how about
that
a news?
That did seem pretty good.
Yeah.
We got some science news this week, which,
lots
of people wrote in to make sure we, covered. To be honest, I'm going to say this up front.
Yeah.
I don't have that good a grasp on what they're talking about. Do any of you?
I don't know what the story is, so.
I can't pretend to understand fully what they're talking about.
Well, it's a thing about the Big Bang. They detected a thing that corroborates the fact that something they thought about the Big Bang really did happen.
My understanding is that I posted the video of the researcher going to the home the scientist who, one of the scientists who proposed this piece of evidence.
Yes.
That if this was discovered, this would support predictions of what you should find if the Big Bang were true.
Yes.
Right. And my understanding from watching that and reading the associated, accompanying articles was that, this is like a 30-year-old prediction.
Okay.
Right. That That's now cool. The experimental evidence was in.
Ah, all right.
And I posted the video of, you know, the researcher showing up at the home of this, I guess, retired physicist, giving him the news, and then they sit down and they share some champagne.
Right.
And the scientist went on at some length about, boy, I hope this really indicates what it looks like it indicates, and we're not just latching on to these results because they're beautiful. No, I think he's Scandinavian of some kind because I can't do that voice.
I hope this really, really indicates.
No.
But it was great hearing
the
caution out of this guy who's the guy you'd think in the entire world who most wanted to hear this news.
Yes. Right.
And he still stuck to his basic, you know, skeptical guns.
That's right. Beautiful, man.
And I posted that piece of video, and I said, now show me one example of a theologian having his theories verified by experimental evidence. Just one.
You're right.
Yeah, and
his religious theories.
Show a theologian showing that kind of restraint. Because, you know, you pull out a block of wood and say, hey, I got this from this place that where Noah's Ark actually sank, and then they flip the fuck out. And they're all like, wow, what do you think of that, atheists?
That's right, in your face.
All right, so go on with your story.
Yeah,
I've given enough background.
So this story from CNN says, there's no way for us to know exactly what happened some 13.8 billion years ago when our universe burst onto the scene, but scientists announced Monday a breakthrough in understanding how our world as we know it came to be. If the discovery holds up to scrutiny, it's evidence of how the universe rapidly expanded less than a trillionth of a second after the Big Bang.
Right.
It teaches us something crucial about how our universe began, said Sean Carroll, a physicist at California Institute of Technology, who was not involved in the study. It's an amazing achievement that we humans doing science systematically for just a few hundred years can extend our understanding that far. What's more, researchers discovered direct evidence for the first time of what Albert Einstein predicted in his general theory of relativity, gravitational waves.
Right.
These are essentially ripples in space-time, which have been thought of as the first tremors of the Big Bang. according to the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics. A telescope at the South Pole called BICEP 2, Background Imaging of Cosmic Extragalactic Polarization, was critical to the discovery. The telescope allowed scientists to analyze the polarization of light left over from the earlier universe, leading to Monday's landmark announcement.
Cool. Yeah, I said I imagined a gray, white-haired Einstein jumping up and down, flipping everyone off, shouting, "In your face!"
Cool.
Yep.
It's cool that they can still pull in data from the very beginning of the universe, but they can't find a Malaysian plane.
Maybe it's emitting gravity waves.
But maybe that's because God stole the plane. Do you have that CNN story?
They were raptured early.
Seriously.
What, seriously?
On CNN, one of the people in a discussion about this proposed maybe something magical, supernatural, or divine happened, and that's why they can't find it.
If you can find something else to read for a couple of minutes, I can get that for you.
I can find something else to read for a couple of minutes. Right. Here, I'm just going to read this guy praising me.
Hey, I hope you brought the one of somebody praising me this week.
Yeah, but you told me not to read it until the top of the hour.
Oh, that is related? Yeah. Okay.
That's the same guy.
All right, fine.
Super Pope stole the March 5th show. And he may be stealing the spotlight from Pope Francis. Quote, "I'm going to depart now and return to my duties, telling people it's all their fault and that if they don't sign up, they'll be tortured forever." Hilarious. "Keep up the good work, guys." Signed, Tor. And I want to point out that's Tor, T-O-R, not Thor, T-H-O-R, who would be somebody in a position to, you know, comment on other superheroes.
Hopefully it's not Tor Johnson speaking from beyond the grave.
No, I generally don't give last names because I don't know if people want that. So
no,
I,
probably not.
So I try to be a little circumspect. Is that enough minutes?
Sure, yeah.
Go.
From Mediaite.com.
Yeah.
CNN anchor Don Lemon and Decoded host Brad Meltzer. That's host of something called Decoded.
Decoded host.
Bandied about the idea Sunday afternoon that something beyond our understanding happened to Malaysia Airlines flight MH370. That something being perhaps supernatural, maybe? Especially, quote, "Especially today on a day when we deal with the supernatural," Lemon said, "we go to the church. The supernatural power of God. People are saying to me, why aren't you talking about the possibility, and I'm just putting it out there, that something odd happened to this plane, something beyond our understanding."
Because it's stupid.
Yeah.
That's why.
Yeah. People roll their eyes at conspiracy theories, but what conspiracy theories do is they ask the hardest, most outrageous questions sometimes. But every once in a while, they're right. Meltzer said.
Yeah. What time were they right about saying it was anything was supernatural?
Yeah.
Which times were those?
Clots?
I'll tell you, there is one reason why that happened on CNN. It's a one word answer. Lost.
You think they were plugging a show that's off the air now?
No, I don't think they're plugging it. I think that Lost introduced this whole idea of supernatural magical things surrounding airplane disappearances.
Could be
into popular culture in a way that's still there.
And that's why
shows like that annoy me.
Or was it weird ass science fiction things instead of magical?
I mean, could also be
Lost
that...
was clearly supernatural. Did you see the last episode?
No, I didn't.
Yeah.
Okay.
Spoiler.
No,
I haven't seen.
They spoiled it.
Lost.
I'm just telling you what it was.
I mean, it could also just be that CNN is a 24/7 news network and they really don't have that much interesting to cover. I mean, look how much we struggle to do an hour and a half every 2 weeks.
Yeah. Well, if you can't find something, you know, there's only so much you can say about it.
You know, it's like dead air and they're like, what kind of bullshit can we say right now that will keep our audience entertained?
Well, is that enough excuse? They are supposed to be a news outlet, and so I think it is at least
a piece of the puzzle that we need to consider.
Oh, sure. Yeah, okay. Absolutely. Certainly as valid as my Lost thing.
Yeah.
Certainly. Neither of them is a justification, though.
And also, we live in a culture that is full of people giving inappropriate levels of respect to total nonsense.
Yes.
Right. That is true.
Yeah, somebody on the show this week did, like, bring up some kind of vague hint of a conspiracy theory about the Malaysia Airlines because, you know, he was talking about, like, are you skeptical of official government stories? And then he said, you know, what do you think about Malaysian Airlines? And I was like, I don't even think there is an official government story. They're all just pretty much saying we don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway,
I just don't pay attention to those things. I figure when there has been an investigation by the people with the skills and, you know, the training and whose job it is to figure out that stuff, they'll tell us and then I'll know.
Mm-hmm.
It is not – that's what's wrong with our news media these days is they've turned it into a participatory activity where the people watching the news are given the impression that it's somehow their business to be involved in figuring this shit out. And it's just totally not. It's none of your damn business.
Yeah,
shut up. Turn off the television and go play sports or something.
It's like when
– I don't know why I said sports. I hate sports.
When the National Healthcare website was having problems, a bunch of people on Reddit got together and, like, looked at the HTML code that you can see from on if you just click view source on any website. And from that, they just spun all kinds of, you know, I know how this happened. They're using blah, blah, blah database. And I looked at this, you know, and, you know, it's clear that these two teams didn't talk to each other. And I was like, you know, I am a professional web developer. And I looked at the same stuff they're looking at. And I was like, these people have no idea what they're talking about.
Yeah.
But they have this inflated sense of importance that if you get together in a big group and all come to a consensus about something where you don't have all the facts, that is somehow news.
Yeah, no, there is a reason why, you know, there are people who are employed to figure out stuff like that. It's 'cause, you know, the idea is you get people who might have a chance of knowing what the hell they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I got a thing.
Oh, yeah?
This is a little different. We haven't...
Put that thing away.
We haven't... Thank you. Crossed over between this show and the Atheist Experience show much in our episodes so far. But something happened on Sunday's Atheist Experience when you were hosting, Russell.
Yeah, not this Sunday, but before. I think.
Was it not this past Sunday?
Yeah, I think it was the Sunday before this one.
Okay, Sunday before this one. But you had a caller. You were on with Don Baker.
Yes.
And you had a caller, Drew, in Carlsbad, New Mexico.
That is correct.
Who offered this set of claims. One, Dan Barker posted a video or was in a video on YouTube.
He was in a video by Oprah, I think.
Okay, Dan Barker was in a video on YouTube where he claimed that he healed a mute, and two, that Vic Stenger in his book said that if there were a God, you would expect miracles to occur.
Right.
Therefore, miracles obviously had occurred, and there's God.
Yeah.
Right.
Now you guys kind of lightly, gently poked and prodded at his story, but
do that much research like live on the show. It's boring to watch two people search the internet.
But you did do research after.
Yes.
And you posted some stuff on the blog. You want to tell us about that?
Yeah. Here's the story Dan Barker was actually telling, and this appears in his book, Godless. He says, it was before one of our meetings as we were preparing and praying when Gary, who sang bass in the quartet and whose turn it was to preach that night, whispered to us that he had lost his voice and was unable to sing or talk. So we all gathered in a circle around Gary and laid our hands on his shoulders, and I prayed out loud for God to heal Gary's voice, ending with the words, Gary, in the name of Jesus, be healed! Gary looked up and yelled, praise the Lord, in a strong voice. He went on to sing and preach that night.
Okay. So he wasn't a mute.
Not at all.
So this was right. Way less of a miracle even than this guy was trying to claim.
This
though,
a guy with a sore throat.
I've been on the Atheist Experience show and had this weird old lady claim that because there was a guy at a gas station who knew how to change a tire, that was a miracle.
Amazing.
So I'm not sure that even confronted with the actual facts that Drew from Carlsbad, New Mexico, would have backed down from his position. Because the standard for a miracle is pretty low for some people.
To his credit, when I wrote back with the story, he did say something like, huh, I hadn't heard that.
You email exchanged with him.
Yes, I did.
Okay.
I mean, he did back off from that one somewhat.
Okay. But that's not really what interested me about this incident.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. Here we have a guy. He's a Christian. He's going around reading books by Vic Stenger and watching videos with Dan Barker in them, mm-hmm. and mining them for things to try to use to prop up Christianity.
Yes.
That
right.
fascinated me. That and that he's using them against each other, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those two things by themselves were not his argument. It's only when he was able to construct this syllogism that
yes.
because Vic Stenger said a thing and another atheist, Dan Barker, said a thing that seemed to trigger that first thing, that therefore conclusion.
Therefore,
right,
God.
Which clearly Dan didn't even think it was a miracle.
And that's, right. that and that's another point. The whole reference to Dan Barker,
mm-hmm.
the purpose of referencing Dan Barker instead of some, it could have been anybody, right? He could have picked,
sure.
you know, here's this housewife from Poughkeepsie who said that her green apples turned into red apples just when she needed them for a recipe. I just made that up,
yeah,
right?
That sounds
bring up the Vic Stenger quote. See, Vic Stenger said there would be miracles. This lady reported a miracle, therefore God.
Right.
Why Wouldn't is Dan Barker involved? Because we're atheists, right? And we trust Dan Barker as a fellow atheist.
Right.
He picked Dan Barker to be his vehicle for getting the apparent miracle claim stated.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a
because
thing
we're
that...
supposed because we're supposed to trust Dan Barker. But then it's... when you asked him on the show, right? Well, don't you think a little strange that Dan Barker himself doesn't think that this counted as an example of a miracle?
Right.
Drew's response was, well, I think he's being very foolish. So
yes.
he picks this guy because we'll trust him, but he doesn't trust him.
Right. He says
Drew
he's foolish.
Drew is not willing to take Dan Barker at his word.
Right.
He uses him cynically, dishonestly, because he thinks we'll trust him.
Right.
Because it's all about getting us to cave. It's
right.
nothing about making an actual argument.
Well, you know, this tactic is at least as old as the Bible, because what the Doubting Thomas story is all about, right? It's like, here's a guy who doubted, and then when he saw the evidence, he changed his mind, so why don't you trust this guy who was an unbeliever like you? That is what that story is there for, I'm convinced.
Except that this is not that. Dan Barker is still an atheist.
Yeah, right.
Right? Dan Barker is not a guy who had an experience and became a Christian.
Yeah.
We have seen a million of those. This is a guy who had an experience and stopped being a Christian. And he's still being trotted out to try to get us hooked in this stupid little he said, he said, he said.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was immediately extremely suspicious because this sounds like, you know, a new meme, a new tactic to by Christians, because now that atheism is starting to get traction, now they're digging into atheism to try to find their evidence to support their own arguments in this really dishonest, cynical way.
Yeah.
And what are we to make of the fact that Drew, or whoever he got this information from, is going around compiling these mind quotes from atheists? So I immediately got on the internet to hunt around to see if I could find, you know, references to Drew as a preacher, right, as a professional in the business of doing this. Wasn't able to find that. And I looked for places on the internet that talk about this specific thing he brought up, right? Dan Barker and Vic Stenger. Didn't find that either.
Interesting.
So we've caught this early. And I think it's really important for atheists, for our fellow atheists to be aware this could be a new tactic that they're trotting out. And if it catches on, you could expect to hear to see more of this kind of thing from elsewhere.
Well, it's sort of like the thing they use all the time, saying, "Oh, science is just another religion,"
right?
Or atheism is just another religion. It's like they're denigrating religion,
right?
Well, you know, yet they're you know,
and that's like
trying
this,
to lower the trying to lower the standards,
and that's like something. This how. I'm just. What's the connection?
Well, they seem to be using.
It's selective trust of a concept.
Yeah,
it's like. I'm trying to help you out.
Well,
here.
they're using what we consider derogatory as a derogatory.
Right, right.
Towards
it is similar in the sense that they're trying to manipulate us by what they think our emotional uncritical responses will be.
Right.
In that case, the example you brought up, it's a negative reaction of distrust.
Mm-hmm.
And well, in this case that they trotted out on the atheist,
and the perception,
it's our trust of fellow atheists
that they're trying to take advantage of. We trust Dan Barker and don't trust. Miracle stories, so they're attempting to bring those into equilibrium, sort of, by raising the credibility of miracles, supposedly, while simultaneously lowering the credibility of Dan Barker. How does that grab you?
No, I don't think that they were lowering Dan Barker's credibility. I think the fact that the Christian himself didn't trust Dan Barker's conclusion is just evidence that this is an entirely cynical exercise.
Yeah.
Right? It's not that Drew himself is compelled by Dan Barker's testimony.
Yeah.
Certainly.
He doesn't trust Dan Barker's testimony because Dan Barker's conclusion was, but that was just all bullshit.
Yeah, and I see that same cynicism in the atheism is just another religion.
Yeah,
because
I get that.
They don't mean that religion is a lower standard.
Right.
But they play that card to try and get that one particular argument. You know?
Yeah.
It's like, ugh.
Yeah. Did you have something, Russell, that, story about some atheist saying something stupid?
Because
this sort of dovetails into another.
I did.
We have another thing to talk about that's related to this.
An atheist saying something stupid?
Yeah.
Why? They never do
that.
But
how?
It happens.
Okay, so I'm going to have to freestyle some backstory to this since it doesn't have all of this. But Dave Silverman. Good friend to the atheist community, president to American Atheists, the originator of the what the fuck face that's popular on Reddit, great Bill O'Reilly interviewee, decided that he would drum up, attendee of our Bat Cruise one time.
Oh, cool.
He decided that he would drum up some more popularity for atheists by hosting a table at CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Committee,
right,
which takes place every year.
But I thought I thought CPAC turned him down after he said something about, you know, facts.
Indeed, they did.
So what's the story about?
I'm getting there. Working my way to it.
All right.
First of all, he said something like, well, the religious right should be scared of us. And then at that point, they used that as an excuse to yank his permission to host a table there. So some guy at Raw Story, Roy Edroso, decided to catch up with him. Dave went on to attend CPAC, although he didn't host the table there anymore, and gave some quotes to this guy. He said, I came with a message that – this is Dave Silverman talking. I came with a message that Christianity and conservatism are not inextricably linked, he told me, and that social conservatives are holding down the real conservatives. Social conservatism isn't real conservatism. It's actually big government. It's theocracy. I'm talking about gay rights, right to die, abortion rights. And at this point, the interviewer breaks in. Hold on, I said. I think the Right to Life guys who have a booth here and have had every year since CPAC started would disagree that they're not real conservatives. I'll admit there is a secular argument against abortion, said Silverman. You can't deny that it's there, and it's maybe not as clean-cut as school prayer, right to die, and gay marriage. Want to break in with comments now?
Did he say what that secular argument was?
He did not. He definitely did not.
Has he said it subsequently?
And I should point out that Dave Silverman and people speaking for Dave Silverman have since scrambled all over the place to make sure we understand that Dave Silverman is himself pro-choice.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, and even going by the letter of what he said, there are secular people who are pro-choice.
There are.
I'm sorry, pro-life. There are.
There is.
And
these,
they make arguments.
They do.
So that part of what he said is technically correct.
Sure.
And when he says they're not as, what did he say? How did he characterize it? Not as
clear cut.
Well, not as clear cut runs the gamut from slightly less fully formed to complete bullshit.
Right.
So that's technically correct, but the reason I wanted you to bring this up is here we had this Christian banking on our blind trust in everything other atheists say in order to try to spin this argument when we don't have that, do we?
Don't have that, and I can't think of anyone in the secular movement who has not, at one time or another, been harshly criticized by other atheists for something they say.
Right.
Right.
And Christopher Hitchens had that bullshit about being in love with the Iraq War.
Right.
Richard Dawkins, a lot of people said he thought he said something pretty stupid and sexist.
Sam Harris said stupid things about free will.
Yeah, and and profiling.
Wait, your turn, Dennis.
Yes. Oh.
Right.
Free will
but,
is the
trigger. But let me. Oh, yes. But here's the point that I'm bringing warning. These two stories together, right, to address this point. Not only is it silly for us to just blindly trust other people because they are in the atheist camp, right? We don't do it. But what we actually do is we get really hostile, some of us, when members of the atheist camp, one or another member of the atheist camp, gets caught saying something kind of shockingly wrong.
Ill-informed.
Yeah. We got Bill Maher with the anti-vax stuff, right? add him to the list if we didn't already. And, you know, I go on my Facebook wall. Bill Maher says some brilliantly cutting, insightful thing about religion on his show.
Yeah.
I put it up, and invariably I get an atheist screaming bloody murder because Bill Maher said stupid anti-vax things.
Right.
How is that relevant? You shouldn't be thinking that Bill Maher was supposed to be perfect in the first place. The only reason you're so upset is because you think that Bill Maher was supposed to be perfect in the first place. Because you think that me putting up one of his videos means I think every word that comes out of his mouth is golden.
Right. Right.
It's not. It's that video that I think is golden. Period.
Right?
I'm fully aware Bill Maher is an idiot when it comes to the vaccination science. Right? Totally aware of that.
Yeah.
Doesn't make any difference. I have deep disagreements with Sam Harris on the subject of free will.
Mm-hmm.
I have those same deep disagreements with Dennis on the subject of free will. But I think Dennis has said brilliant, insightful things on other subjects that I'm more than happy to agree with, right? While at the same time having my reservations about that one other thing.
Mm-hmm.
And not only is it silly to work yourself up into a frenzy of anger about some atheist saying something you don't agree with, right? Because you shouldn't have – there's no need to assume that we're all – that any of us is supposed to be perfect in the first place. Not only that, this Christian got on the Atheist Experience show –
mm-hmm.
banking on that blind trust
mm-hmm.
to try to make his argument. It is a defense mechanism for our worldview,
mm-hmm.
not to ever have 100% trust in our fellow atheists.
Right.
Right? It could have turned out that Dan Barker really did – it wasn't true, but it could have turned out that Dan Barker really did think that he had cured a mute.
Yeah.
And if Dan Barker was on record with sincere belief that he had somehow cured a mute,
I would say
that is a thing Dan Barker said that I think is moronic.
Yes.
But – wouldn't stop me from having deep respect for other things Dan Barker has said, which I totally agree with. See?
Yeah.
And that completely defuses the thing this Christian tried to do on the show.
The flip side of that is that some people get super defensive when somebody that they really like
mm-hmm.
gets called out for saying a very stupid thing. And we should be free to say, hey, I respect a lot of what Dan Barker or Bill Maher or whoever or Dave Silverman says most of the time, but dear God.
Yeah. But we're afraid that people will think
right there.
People will think that we all agree with them on all the issues that
right,
they,
which is
that
just,
they say.
Which
is wrong.
Silly.
Yeah.
We shouldn't foster that expectation or have that expectation ourselves.
We're not the one with a big book of rules.
Right.
Yeah.
That defines how we're supposed to be as atheists,
or
what views we're supposed to have.
And we're not the people with religious figureheads
right.
who are just our leaders and we
mm-hmm.
subscribe to everything out of their mouths.
Yeah.
Are we not that, not only should we not be that for just basic practical
mm-hmm.
reasons, but also because it's a defense mechanism. That will
yeah.
that not doing yeah. that makes us less vulnerable to specifically the kind of attack that this Christian launched on the Atheist Experience show.
Right.
That's my point.
I agree.
Okay,
I'm done
with that.
Yeah, well, I'm not quite done talking about
yeah, cool.
abortion
Go for it.
Or
yeah, yeah.
CPAC or anything.
Right.
I just wanted to bring up that there is on YouTube somewhere a video of Matt Dillahunty a couple of years ago,
uh-huh.
or maybe
yeah.
last year.
Not Matt. Don't tell me Matt said something stupid.
No. Matt
okay.
was debating against a secular pro-lifer.
Because Matt's perfect.
Oh, a secular pro-lifer.
That's right. Matt
okay.
never – I've
yeah.
never disagreed with
no.
anything Matt said.
Okay, go ahead.
No, but in this case, he was debating against somebody from the organization Secular Pro-Life, Christine Kruzelnicki. And Matt, on this occasion, did, I have to say in a completely unbiased way, wipe the floor with her. Her arguments were terrible. I mean, they were the same, you know, with some of the religious language stripped out, they were nevertheless the same blunt appeals to emotion by, putting up slides of bloody fetuses and that sort of thing, and making flatly untrue blanket statements about what scientists have to say about humanity. P.Z. Myers was in the audience on that occasion and said authoritatively, "You're just making that up, what you say that, you know, medical professionals think about."
Right.
In this particular case with the Dave Silverman statement, P.Z. Myers marshaled up some numbers. The American Secular Census asked atheists what their views were on various subjects, and here were their responses to the question, which of these statements best describes your opinion about abortion? 55.4% said abortion should be legal without any restrictions beyond those all applied to any other medical procedure. Mm-hmm. 43% said abortion should be legal, but with certain reasonable restrictions on gestational stage. So those two answers together already add up to over 98%.
Right.
Then we're down to
pretty clear.
0.9% think abortion should be legal only in cases of rape, incest, or to save the woman's life, 0.2% only to save the woman's life, and 0.0% abortion should be illegal.
Wow.
And what I said earlier.
Yes.
As you brought up the specter of people getting defensive.
Right.
I'm not defensive about Dave Silverman. If Dave Silverman said if he meant by his comments that there were sound secular arguments for the pro-life, right? If he said that, then I disagree with him.
Okay.
But I don't think it's defensive to just look at the letter of what he said and realize, you know, sometimes you just don't want to antagonize people, you know?
I've never known Dave not to want to antagonize
fellow atheists. That's what we're talking about, right?
Well, okay.
So I hope that that this all gets straightened out. I think it's important for people to know what Dave Silverman thinks on that issue, and I think it's important for him to hear what people think about what he thinks.
Yeah.
And then we'll move on, and maybe he'll remain a guy who on that one issue continues to say bullshit. Or maybe he'll change his opinion. But what I hope will not happen is people will immediately react with negatively whenever they hear his name because of this one incident. Because nobody is right on every issue.
No, that is not my intention here.
No, I know.
Okay, I think it's time to get to Cosmos. We're running out of show.
Okay, Russell, I'm sorry you didn't get any NPR kudos last show. I sincerely think you deserve some mad kudos for the Atheist Experience. On the other hand, for beating the call screeners 2-0 on the trolls. What the hell is up with the trolls screaming recently? Yeah, I noticed that on the show. It's not particularly impressive trolling, and it's not even funny. I hope you guys can talk about Cosmos, A Space-Time Journey on your next show. I imagine its subject material would be prime fodder for the Shit Internet Apologists Say segment. Both episodes have brought me to tears. That's Jeremiah.
What a good
idea. I don't think Jeremiah meant that the stuff said on Cosmos is fodder for Shit Internet Apologists Say.
No.
I think he is referring to the response by fundamentalists.
Yes.
Yeah, that's exactly what it
is. There is that.
What do you have on that?
Well, I mean, first, before we get to that, Have you guys seen Cosmos?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
I've seen two issues.
There have been two episodes.
Right.
I've seen one.
Second one was better than the first one.
Oh, yeah. Good. Then I look forward to
But the
to
first
it.
One was the introduction, right? It was very broad, very general context setting stuff.
No detail.
Yeah.
It was kind of beautiful, too.
I mean,
you know, it had, I would call it kind of cheesy computer graphics, uh-huh. but cheesy in this sort of charming way that I think Carl Sagan would like.
Yeah, but I thought episode two, All About Evolution, just hammered the right notes
nice.
The whole time. It was nice. Really nicely done. It built a built a great argument.
Good. There's a news story here from Rocket Stem. I don't know what that is. But... Fox Networks Group has announced the first ever simultaneous cross-network global event for Cosmos, A Space-Time Odyssey, on Sunday, March 9th.
Uh-huh.
That was the first episode.
Uh-huh.
Showing across multiple U.S. networks on Sunday, March 9th, blah, blah, blah. But the thing that I'm highlighting here is that it's apparently the largest global launch ever for any TV series.
Wow.
Damn.
So
cool.
That's pretty cool.
Awesome.
Well, what are the viewership figures for it? Do we know?
I don't know that. Okay. I can't look that up right now.
Okay.
Another brief story that showed up after the first episode of Cosmos. Yes, the first one. on Sunday night, this is from the LA Times, the premiere of the science documentary series Cosmos, A Space-Time Odyssey, on the Oklahoma City Fox affiliate KOKH briefly interrupted by a local news promo. It just so happens that host Neil deGrasse Tyson was referring to the theory of evolution just as the accidental preemption occurred.
Accidental.
Tyson explained how 3.5 million years ago, humans stood up and parted ways from our biological ancestors. In the version that aired on KOKH, Tyson's 20-second discussion of evolution is cut almost entirely thanks to a misplaced spot plugging an upcoming local news broadcast.
Ah, okay.
That was funny.
It's within the bounds
what is this?
Of
Are you doing the segment?
Reason that,
no.
it's, that it's...
You're not doing the segment yet.
I'm okay. about to. Yeah.
All right.
It's within the bounds of possibility that it was an error, but holy.
Yeah,
you know,
I just wanted to get a couple of odds and ends about the show out of the way before I get to my regular segment, which is known as Shit Internet Apologists Say!
Excellent.
Hey, everybody. A big hand for Ben Weaver, who's soloing for the first time as our engineer and got that right. Woohoo! Thanks, Ben.
Awesome, Ben.
So this week I went looking specifically for anti-Cosmos stuff discovered that the Christian Post had hosted a guest columnist, John Stonestreet, who does not like what's going on Cosmos.
No? No, sir.
The cosmos is all that is, all there ever was, and all there ever will be, were the opening words from Carl Sagan's 1980s TV series, The Cosmos. It's a succinct statement of what's become the driving philosophy beyond much of modern science and science education, materialism.
Oh.
Just stop me when you want to translate or anything. This kind of stuff.
Okay. Translation. There, besides stuff, there's something else that you've never had any of or seen any of, but we think that it exists.
But by golly, it has to be there.
And, it has to.
And it offends us that anybody would suggest that we're just making this up.
Damn right. The debate over Darwinian evolution, as heated as that gets, is only one part of a larger worldview conflict, one fought between those who look at the natural world and say, this is designed, and those who look at it and conclude, this happened by itself.
That says exactly what he meant.
Yeah.
The Bible makes it clear which side we Christians are on. The psalmist tells us, quote, "The heavens declare the glory of God, and the sky proclaims his handiwork." Psalms 19. The Apostle Paul tells us in Romans 1 that the creation reveals even the power and moral nature of God, leaving everyone who's looked up at the sky on a starry night without excuse.
Okay, translation.
Translation.
Our book that says this stuff, and people were already criticizing Cosmos in the early years of the first millennium because they said Cosmos was wrong.
Yeah, well, basically it translates to, the Bible says, look at that rainbow. You know, it...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did that.
I did.
Did you do that? No, you didn't. So shut up. That is the message of Job, and I think it is very applicable to Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
The cosmos, scripture tells us, isn't all that is. In fact, it shouts to everyone who has ears to listen that someone, with a capital S, greater and eternal exists. But the question is, do we have ears to hear it?
We have ears. We don't hear that stuff. You are imagining that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Wait a minute.
The translation is,
I mean... spirit ears.
Yeah.
Spirit ears.
My spiritual ears hear.
People who have spirit ears can hear the spirit shouts.
They're big, long, floppy ears. But you can't see them, so they don't look as silly.
I have a spirit arrow through the head.
I have the spirit glasses and big mustache. Nose. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Russell's got the spirit bunny ears.
Yeah.
I like this part because it's bringing up the Narnia books, which are
oh my god,
which is now attempting to prove the truth of the Bible by using a fictional series that is deliberately written in such a way as to support the Bible.
Right, go ahead.
There's a scene in C.S. Lewis's The Magician's Nephew that was one of my favorites. From the Chronicles of Narnia series, when after singing the world into existence, the lion Aslan tries to speak with Uncle Andrew, the magician who first brings those from our world into Narnia. "He has made himself unable to hear my voice," says Aslan. "If I spoke to him, he would hear only growlings and roarings. Oh, Adam's sons, how cleverly you defend yourself against all that may do you good."
I don't remember that line.
What?
I don't remember that line from that book.
That happens.
Was there some reason why he would have wanted to defend himself from hearing what Aslan said? Or is that lion just giving himself too much fucking credit?
Uncle Andrew is your stereotypical earthbound mad scientist who thinks he can harness the magical powers of the universe in his stupid little colorful rings. And then he gets whisked away to Narnia, but like when he sees the White Witch, the future White Witch, spoiler. Uh-huh.
It's a prequel. It's not a spoiler.
That's true. He just sees a hot woman with no supernatural powers whatsoever, and then he gets whisked away to Narnia, and he says, you know, "Oh, these nasty animals are crawling all over me and not talking at all," because he's got his head stuck in the sand of his so-called science, I think.
Yeah.
That is that character in a nutshell.
Right.
Wow. So they're crediting themselves with super senses that the rest of us don't possess.
Right. They have the spirit ears.
Sure.
Do you have spirit ears?
No. I got no spirit ears.
My spirit ears are missing.
I don't have spirit eyes. Don't have spirit ears.
So the translation is this guy that agrees with me wrote a book where he put this thing I'm saying poetically in the mouth of characters that he made up.
Yep.
Because the made up characters in the actual holy book didn't say it right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And
they didn't say it well enough.
When I write it, the conversations turn out right.
I'll say it now. The Narnia books are a better story than the Bible. Not a high bar.
Especially, not a high bar, no.
Especially if you have the spirit reading glasses.
Yes. That helps.
Right. Anyway, I'm going to skim. We're running out of time.
Sure.
All right. But,
are we really?
Yeah, we are. We made it.
Let me make, you know, we started a few minutes late. So we had a little more time than you thought. My clock says, my special magic clock says,
I got a news story that
says we got 21 minutes.
Oh, okay. What, 21?
Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. No, 11.
Okay, 11 minutes. that's still more than you thought.
Plus or minus 50%.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, well, our creator still speaks through the cosmos, and the sons of Adam keep defending themselves against his voice.
Oh, God.
All right, skim, skim, skim. Here's what really strikes me about the new Cosmos series. It is beautiful. I said that. And despite the show trying to explain that beauty away as a product of mindless evolution, the creator's voice still breaks through. That's why DNA discoverer, co-discoverer Francis Crick felt compelled to write, "Biologists must constantly keep in mind that what they see was not designed, but rather evolved."
Well,
no.
Yeah, nobody ever are. Okay, so.
Yes.
There's a natural impulse to believe that there's intent behind the things we see.
Right.
And therefore there just is.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Because our hunches are always right.
There's a natural impulse to want to have sex with every hot chick you see, and therefore you should. There's a natural impulse to want to eat every candy bar you see, and therefore you should. No.
Right.
See, the natural impulse thing doesn't work.
Nope.
Right. That's what science is there to do, remove bias.
That's its freaking job. Okay.
Yeah. Anyway,
wow.
Then he goes on to plug what he thinks is a better production, which is some Christian movie called The Master Designer, The Song. and talks about how anything beautiful pretty much points to God. And then he says, he stops talking about cosmos.
Well,
and
what
just
about the ugly stuff? What does that point to?
Also God.
Okay, well then,
shut
cool.
There's no. All the ugly stuff is beautiful stuff if you have the spirit
eyes,
sunglasses.
To see it, right. Because then it removes the mysterious way.
Right.
I put on my spirit sunglasses and all I saw on billboards everywhere was consume, obey.
Obey.
Watch TV.
Hey, so Russell,
pray.
we're down to 8 minutes.
All right, let me just read the last line and then The entire film, this other guy's film, reminded me not just how overwhelming the evidence for design is, but that the only response to it is worship. Uncle Andrew can keep cosmos.
Translation, this other thing that I agreed with, I liked better.
Yes.
Right.
Okay, so we now have 7.5 minutes left.
Yeah. All right.
And there's a toss-up. Fred Phelps.
Right.
Oh.
Or you might recall we had a question about snake handling.
I think we've had enough snake handling.
Okay.
All right.
Fred Phelps.
Just want to make sure we get to the bottom of this, though.
So, Fred Phelps, too soon? Or is he dead?
He is dead.
No, he's not dead yet.
I think he's dead.
On death's door. Did he die?
I thought he died.
I didn't hear that he died.
Oh, shit.
When did you hear that he died?
He said he was at death's door.
I could swear he died.
Knocking loudly, I presume.
I'm sorry.
He was protesting at death's door with a sign saying, "Death is a fag."
We're quite... You don't
see,
want
now,
to do that.
If he did that, wait a minute. If he did that, I would have to admit some slight respect.
How do you know death is a fag? Well, he's got a boner.
There's an episode of Red Dwarf where Lister is seen dying in the future vision, and then goes when it comes time for him to go to the place where he was seen that he was going to die. He brings up like a lead pipe with him, and Rimmer goes, "You can't whack death on the head." And Lister says, "If he comes near me, I'm going to rip his nipples off." Okay, Red Dwarf
sounds pretty gay, yeah. Lister.
Yeah.
Well, things we
it
do
was
know.
A million years in the future, and there were just those two guys on that show.
Yes, yes.
Plus the cat.
Things we do pretty much know, at least according to Fred Phelps' estranged son, Nathan. He was on the edge of death at Midland Hospice House in Topeka.
Yeah.
He was there in a hospice house because he's not at the Westboro Baptist Church.
Yeah.
Because apparently they've excommunicated him, which is some amusing irony.
Do you know the backstory of that?
You tell me the
backstory. My understanding is that there was a internal power struggle in the Westboro Baptist Church. That power struggle got resolved, and then Fred Phelps said something to the effect of church members should be nicer to each other. Right. And apparently the winner of that struggle didn't care for that sentiment and kicked him out.
Right.
That is what I've heard. I don't know how accurate that is. How would we know?
It's a big contest to see who can be the most hateful. But
what pisses me off is that the media have gotten hold of this and said, put up these big headlines, you know, Fred Phelps excommunicated for calling for niceness, which is bullshit. That it's that implies something totally not related to what the actual reports indicate.
Yes.
There's no indication whatsoever that Fred Phelps had second thoughts about saying horrible things about dead soldiers and gay men.
He's still a horrible, hateful old man.
Yes.
As far as we know, he still is.
Yep.
As opposed to a horrible, hateful lump of dead flesh.
Yes. Somebody in the chat room confirms he is not yet dead.
Yep. Okay.
Now, I've heard rumors that some atheists have said, oh, well, then we should, you know, turn around and pick at the funeral. And I went, no, because from something I've read, the Baptist Church, the church is going to picket the funeral.
No. Actually, according to recent tweets from the church,
they're not.
Just not going to have a funeral.
Which solves the whole thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
I thought that there is a argument going on amongst atheists about whether it would have been appropriate to picket his funeral had he had one to picket. And my response to that is, I think those people who are freaking out about the idea of atheist picketing are freaking out about the wrong thing. Sure, it's questionable what the taste. It's a questionable taste picketing a funeral, but that was far from the central issue when it came to Fred Phelps. The issue with Fred Phelps is that he was wrong,
right,
about gay people and soldiers, right, and said horrific things about them anyway. And the counterexample I want to put up is Hitler. If the Jews had been a race of subhuman, implacable enemies trying to cause the destruction of humanity, as the Nazis said,
right,
you could argue that it would be a necessary thing to round them up and exterminate them all.
Right.
You could make that argument. The problem with Hitler was that he was wrong.
Right. They
aren't. The problem with Fred Phelps is that he was wrong.
Yep.
Now, rounding up and killing and exterminating an entire species of anything is in questionable taste.
Yes.
And picketing a funeral is in questionable taste. But it's totally not the issue.
Right.
Totally not the issue.
It's the
I would not have minded.
That's the issue.
Had there been a scheduled funeral for Fred Phelps and had some atheists showed up to, you know, to crow,
right,
I would not have had a problem with that, particularly.
Yeah, not really. Wait, does that mean that you think, at the end of the movie, Frailty, you think,
go on.
Well,
Right, the movie Frailty, where Bill Paxton is cast as a guy who actually is a hero a demon hunter for God.
Right.
So what's your question?
He's right in that movie, right?
That's the whole creepy point of that.
Yes.
Is that he's right.
But why creepy? I mean, what you just said is that, you know, being...
Do you think...
Did he have an excuse to be right?
Did who...
In that movie. Did he have reason
in that
to
movie,
think he was
in
right?
In that movie, there was a god, and the god was telling him who were the demons.
Did he have reason to believe he was talking to God?
That was the reason.
We're now spoiling the ending.
Okay. Yes, we are.
Oh, come on. People have seen... Anybody who cares has seen that movie. All right, so we got to wrap it up now.
All right.
We're at the end. Thanks, everyone, for listening to another one of our showgrams. When are we on next? Do we know? Eventually. Wednesday in April.
April
2nd.
Wednesday in April. Bye, everyone.
Well, that was the show. If the mics are working and anyone is actually out there, we hope you enjoyed it, regardless of whether any of it was true or not. If the current pattern holds, there will be another episode in 2 weeks on April the 2nd. That is, of course, if any episodes have gone out at all and we're not just fooling ourselves. So until then, we leave you with Satellite by Brian Stieksma, if you believe in that sort of thing.
Shut, you got a chance.